The Golden Bough. A Study of Magic and Religion. By Sir James George Frazer. This audiobook was produced by Klaus-Dieter Mond, Rastatt, Germany and is published under the conditions of the Gutenberg Organization. Chapter 50. Eating the God. Section 1. The Sacrament of First Fruits. We have now seen that the corn spirit is represented sometimes in human, sometimes in animal form, and that in both cases he is killed in the person of his representative and eaten sacramentally. To find examples of actually killing the human representative of the corn spirit, we had naturally to go to savage races. But the harvest suppers of our European peasants have furnished unmistakable examples of the sacramental eating of animals as representatives of the corn spirit. But further, as might have been anticipated, the new corn is itself eaten sacramentally, that is, as the body of the corn spirit. In Wormland, Sweden, the farmer's wife uses the grain of the last sheaf to bake a loaf in the shape of a little girl. This loaf is divided amongst the whole household and eaten by them. Here the loaf represents the corn spirit conceived as a maiden. Just as in Scotland a corn spirit is similarly conceived and represented by the last sheaf made up in the form of a woman and bearing the name of the maiden. As usual, a corn spirit is believed to reside in the last sheaf. And to eat a loaf made from the last sheaf is, therefore, to eat the corn spirit itself. Similarly at La Palisse, in France, a man made of dough is hung upon the fir tree which is carried on the last harvest wagon. The tree and the dough man are taken to the mayor's house and kept there till the vintage is over. Then the close of the harvest is celebrated by a feast at which the mayor breaks the dough man in pieces and gives the pieces to the people to eat. In these examples the corn spirit is represented and eaten in human shape. In other cases, though the new corn is not baked in loaves of human shape, still the solemn ceremonies with which it is eaten suffice to indicate that it is partaken of sacramentally, that is, as the body of the corn spirit. For example, the following ceremonies used to be observed by Lithuanian peasants at eating the new corn. About the time of the autumn sowing, when all the corn had been gotten and the threshing had begun, each farmer held a festival called Sabarius, that is, the mixing or throwing together. He took 9 good handfuls of each kind of crop: wheat, barley, oats, flax, beans, lentils, and the rest. And each handful he divided into 3 parts. The 27 portions of each grain were then thrown on a heap and all mixed up together. The grain used had to be that which was first threshed and winnowed and which had been set aside and kept for this purpose. A part of the grain thus mixed was employed to bake little loaves, 1 for each of the household. The rest was mixed with more barley or oats and made into beer. The first beer brewed from this mixture was for the drinking of the farmer, his wife, and children. The second brew was for the servants. The beer being ready, the farmer chose an evening when no stranger was expected. Then he knelt down before the barrel of beer, drew a jug full of the liquor and poured it on the bung of the barrel, saying, "O fruitful earth, make rye and barley and all kinds of corn to flourish." Next he took the jug to the parlour, where his wife and children awaited him. On the floor of the parlour lay bound a black or white or speckled, not a red, cock and a hen of the same colour and of the same brood, which must have been hatched within the year. Then the farmer knelt down, with the jug in his hand, and thanked God for the harvest and prayed for a good crop next year. Next all lifted up their hands and said, "O God, and thou, O earth, we give you this cock and hen as a freewill offering." With that the farmer killed the fowls with the blows of a wooden spoon, for he might not cut their heads off. After the first prayer and after killing each of the birds he poured out a third of the beer. Then his wife boiled the fowls in a new pot which had never been used before. After that, a bushel was set, bottom upwards, on the floor, and on it were placed the little loaves mentioned above and the boiled fowls. Next the new beer was fetched, together with a ladle and 3 mugs, none of which was used except on this occasion. When the farmer had ladled the beer into the mugs, the family knelt down round the bushel. The father then uttered a prayer and drank off the 3 mugs of beer. The rest followed his example. Then the loaves and the flesh of the fowls were eaten, after which the beer went round again, till everyone had emptied each of the 3 mugs 9 times. None of the food should remain over. But if anything did happen to be left, it was consumed next morning with the same ceremonies. The bones were given to the dog to eat. If he did not eat them all up, the remains were buried under the dung in the cattle stall. This ceremony was observed at the beginning of December. On the day on which it took place, no bad word might be spoken. Such was the custom about 200 years or more ago. At the present day in Lithuania, when new potatoes or loaves made from the new corn are being eaten, all the people at table pull each other's hair. The meaning of this last custom is obscure, but a similar custom was certainly observed by the heathen Lithuanians at their solemn sacrifices. Many of the Estonians of the island of Opesel will not eat bread baked of the new corn till they have first taken a bite at a piece of iron. The iron is here plainly a charm, intended to render harmless the spirit that is in the corn. In southern Lancashire at the present day, when the new potatoes are dug, all the family must taste them, otherwise, the spirit in them (the potatoes) take offence, and the potatoes would not keep. In one part of Yorkshire it is still customary for the clergyman to cut the first corn. And my informant believes that the corn so cut is used to make the communion bread. If the latter part of the custom is correctly reported, and analogy is all in its favor, it shows how the Christian communion has absorbed within itself a sacrament which is doubtless far older than Christianity. The Aino or Aina of Japan are said to distinguish various kinds of millet as male and female respectively, and these kinds, taken together, are called the divine husband and wife cereal, Amarek Horakamu. Therefore, before millet is pounded and made into cakes for general eating, the old men have a few made for themselves first to worship. When they are ready, they pray to them very earnestly and say, "O thou cereal deity, we worship thee. Thou hast grown very well this year, and thy flavor will be sweet. Thou art good. The goddess of fire will be glad, and we also shall rejoice greatly. O thou God, O thou divine cereal, do thou nourish the people. I now partake of thee. I worship thee and give thee thanks." After having thus prayed, they, the worshippers, take a cake and eat it, and from this time the people may all partake of the new millet. And so with many gestures of homage and words of prayer this kind of food is dedicated to the well-being of the Aina. No doubt the cereal offering is regarded as a tribute paid to a god, but that god is no other than the seed itself. And it is only a god insofar as it is beneficial to the human body. At the close of the rice harvest in the East Indian island of Bera, each clan meets at a common sacramental meal, to which every member of the clan is bound to contribute a little of the new rice. This meal is called eating the soul of the rice, a name which clearly indicates the sacramental character of the repast. Some of the rice is also set apart and offered to the spirits. Amongst the Orthodox of Minahasa, in Celebes, the priest sows the first rice seed and plucks the first ripe rice in each field. This rice he roasts and grinds into meal, and gives some of it to each of the household. Shortly before the rice harvest in Boland Mungondo, another district of Celebes, an offering is made of a small pig or a fowl. Then the priest plucks a little rice, first on his own field and next on those of his neighbors. All the rice thus plucked by him he dries along with his own, and then gives it back to the respective owners, who have it ground and boiled. When it is boiled, the women take it back, with an egg, to the priest, who offers the egg in sacrifice and returns the rice to the women. Of this rice every member of the family, down to the youngest child, must partake. After this ceremony everyone is free to get in his rice. Amongst the Burgas or Badagas, a tribe of the Nilgiri Hills in southern India, the first handful of seed is sown and the first sheaf reaped by a Kurumba, a man of a different tribe, the members of which the Burgas regard as sorcerers. The grain contained in the first sheaf is that day reduced to meal, made into cakes, and, being offered as a first fruit oblation, is, together with the remainder of the sacrificed animal, partaken of by the burgher and the whole of his family, as the meat of a federal offering and sacrifice. Among the Hindus of southern India, the eating of the new rice is the occasion of a family festival called Pongal. The new rice is boiled in a new pot on a fire which is kindled at noon on the day when, according to Hindu astrologers, the sun enters the Tropic of Capricorn. The boiling of the pot is watched with great anxiety by the whole family, for as the milk boils, so will the coming year be. If the milk boils rapidly, the year will be prosperous. But it will be the reverse if the milk boils slowly. Some of the new boiled rice is offered to the image of Ganesha. Then everyone partakes of it. In some parts of northern India, the festival of the new crop is known as Navan, that is, new grain. When the crop is ripe, the owner takes the omens, goes to the field, plucks 5 or 6 ears of barley in the spring crop and 1 of the millets in the autumn harvest. This is brought home, parched, and mixed with coarse sugar, butter, and curds. Some of it is thrown on the fire in the name of the village gods and deceased ancestors. The rest is eaten by the family. The ceremony of eating the new yams at Onisha, on the Niger, is thus described: each headman brought out 6 yams, and cut down young branches of palm leaves and placed them before his gate, roasted 3 of the yams, and got some kola nuts and fish. After the yam is roasted, the Libya, or country doctor, takes the yam, scrapes it into a sort of meal, and divides it into halves. He then takes 1 piece, and places it on the lips of the person who is going to eat the new yam. The eater then blows up the steam from the hot yam, and afterwards pokes the hole into his mouth, and says, "Tea, thank God for being permitted to eat the new yam." He then begins to chew it heartily, with fish likewise. Among the Nandi of British East Africa, when the Eleusine grain is ripening in autumn, every woman who owns a cornfield goes out into it with her daughters, and they all pluck some of the ripe grain. Each of the women then fixes 1 grain in her necklace and chews another, which she rubs on her forehead, throat, and breast. No mark of joy escapes them. Sorrowfully they cut a basket full of the new corn, and carrying it home place it in the loft to dry. As the ceiling is of wicker work, a good deal of the grain drops through the crevices and falls into the fire, where it explodes with a crackling noise. The people make no attempt to prevent this waste, for they regard the crackling of the grain in the fire as a sign that the souls of the dead are partaking of it. A few days later, porridge is made from the new grain and served up with milk at the evening meal. All the members of the family take some of the porridge and dab it on the walls and roofs of the huts. Also, they put a little in their mouths and spit it out towards the east and on the outside of the huts. Then, holding up some of the grain in his hand, the head of the family prays to God for health and strength, and likewise for milk, and everybody present repeats the words of the prayer after him. Amongst the Chufas of Natal and Zola land, no one may eat of the new fruits till after a festival which marks the beginning of the Chufa year and falls at the end of December or the beginning of January. All the people assemble at the king's kraal, where they feast and dance. Before they separate, the dedication of the people takes place. Various fruits of the earth, as corn, mealies, and pumpkins, mixed with the flesh of a sacrificed animal and with medicine, are boiled in great pots, and a little of this food is placed in each man's mouth by the king himself. After thus partaking of the sanctified fruits, a man is himself sanctified for the whole year, and may immediately get in his crops. It is believed that if any man were to partake of the new fruits before the festival, he would die. If he were detected, he would be put to death, or at least all his cattle would be taken from him. The holiness of the new fruits is well marked by the rule that they must be cooked in a special pot which is used only for this purpose, and on a new fire kindled by a magician through the friction of 2 sticks which are called husband and wife. Among the Bechuanas it is a rule that before they partake of the new crops they must purify themselves. The purification takes place at the commencement of the new year on a day in January which is fixed by the chief. It begins in the great kraal of the tribe, where all the adult males assemble. Each of them takes in his hand leaves of a gourd called by the natives lerots, described as something between a pumpkin and a vegetable marrow. And having crushed the leaves he anoints with the expressed juice his big toes and his navel. Many people indeed apply the juice to all the joints of their body, but the better informed say that this is a vulgar departure from ancient custom. After this ceremony in the great kraal every man goes home to his own kraal, assembles all the members of his family, men, women, and children, and smears them all with the juice of the lerots leaves. Some of the leaves are also pounded, mixed with milk in a large wooden dish, and given to the dogs to lap. Then the porridge plate of each member of the family is rubbed with the lerots leaves. When this purification has been completed, but not before, the people are free to eat of the new crops. The Bororo Indians of Brazil think that it would be certain death to eat the new maize before it has been blessed by the medicine man. The ceremony of blessing it is as follows. The half-ripe husk is washed and placed before the medicine man, who by dancing and singing for several hours, and by incessant smoking, works himself up into a state of ecstasy, whereupon he bites into the husk, trembling in every limb and uttering shrieks from time to time. A similar ceremony is performed whenever a large animal or a large fish is killed. The Bororo are firmly persuaded that were any man to touch unconsecrated maize or meat, before the ceremony had been completed, he and his whole tribe would perish. Amongst the Creek Indians of North America, the Buscor Festival of First Fruits was the chief ceremony of the year. It was held in July or August, when the corn was ripe, and marked the end of the old year and the beginning of the new one. Before it took place, none of the Indians would eat or even handle any part of the new harvest. Sometimes each town had its own busk. Sometimes several towns united to hold one in common. Before celebrating the busk, the people provided themselves with new clothes and new household utensils and furniture. They collected their old clothes and rubbish, together with all the remaining grain and other old provisions, cast them together in one common heap, and consumed them with fire. As a preparation for the ceremony, all the fires in the village were extinguished, and the ashes swept clean away. In particular, the hearth or altar of the temple was dug up and the ashes carried out. Then the chief priest put some roots of the button snake plant, with some green tobacco leaves and a little of the new fruits, at the bottom of the fireplace, which he afterwards commanded to be covered up with white clay, and wetted over with clean water. A thick arbor of green branches of young trees was then made over the altar. Meanwhile, the women at home were cleaning out their houses, renewing the old hearths, and scouring all the cooking vessels that they might be ready to receive the new fire and the new fruits. The public or sacred square was carefully swept of even the smallest crumbs of previous feasts, for fear of polluting the first fruit offerings. Also every vessel that had contained or had been used about any food during the expiring year was removed from the temple before sunset. Then all the men who were not known to have violated the law of the first fruit offering and that of marriage during the year were summoned by a crier to enter the holy square and observe a solemn fast. But the women, except six old ones, the children, and all who had not attained the rank of warriors were forbidden to enter the square. Sentinels were also posted at the corners of the square to keep out all persons deemed impure and all animals. A strict fast was then observed for 2 nights and a day, the devotees drinking a bitter decoction of button snake root, in order to vomit and purge their sinful bodies. That the people outside the square might also be purified, one of the old men laid down a quantity of green tobacco at a corner of the square. This was carried off by an old woman and distributed to the people without, who chewed and swallowed it, in order to afflict their souls. During this general fast, the women, children, and men of weak constitution were allowed to eat after midday, but not before. On the morning when the fast ended, the women brought a quantity of the old year's food to the outside of the sacred square. These provisions were then fetched in and set before the famished multitude, but all traces of them had to be removed before noon. When the sun was declining from the meridian, all the people were commanded by the voice of a crier to stay within doors, to do no bad act, and to be sure to extinguish and throw away every spark of the old fire. Universal silence now reigned. Then the high priest made the new fire by the friction of two pieces of wood, and placed it on the altar under the green arbor. This new fire was believed to atone for all past crimes except murder. Next, a basket of new fruits was brought. The high priest took out a little of each sort of fruit, rubbed it with bear's oil, and offered it, together with some flesh, to the bountiful Holy Spirit of Fire, as a first fruit offering, and an annual oblation for sin. He also consecrated the sacred emetics, the button snake root and the kasana or black drink, by pouring a little of them into the fire. The persons who had remained outside now approached, without entering, the sacred square. And the chief priest thereupon made a speech, exhorting the people to observe their old rites and customs, announcing that the new divine fire had purged away the sins of the past year, and earnestly warning the women that, if any of them had not extinguished the old fire, or had contracted any impurity, they must forthwith depart, lest the divine fire should spoil both them and the people. Some of the new fire was then set down outside the holy square. The women carried it home joyfully, and laid it on their unpolluted hearths. When several towns had united to celebrate the festival, the new fire might thus be carried for several miles. The new fruits were then dressed on the new fires and eaten with bear's oil, which was deemed indispensable. At one point of the festival, the men rubbed the new corn between their hands, then on their faces and breasts. During the festival which followed, the warriors, dressed in their wild martial array, their heads covered with white down and carrying white feathers in their hands, danced round the sacred arbor, under which burned the new fire. The ceremonies lasted 8 days, during which the strictest continence was practiced. Towards the conclusion of the festival, the warriors fought a mock battle. Then the men and women together, in three circles, danced round the sacred fire. Lastly, all the people smeared themselves with white clay and bathed in running water. They came out of the water believing that no evil could now befall them for what they had done amiss in the past. So they departed in joy and peace. To this day, also, the remnant of the Seminole Indians of Florida, a people of the same stock as the Creeks, hold an annual purification and festival called the Green Corn Dance, at which the new corn is eaten. On the evening of the first day of the festival, they quaff a nauseous, black drink, as it is called, which acts both as an emetic and a purgative. They believe that he who does not drink of this liquor cannot safely eat the new green corn, and besides that he will be sick at some time in the year. While the liquor is being drunk, the dancing begins, and the medicine men join in it. Next day they eat of the green corn. The following day they fast, probably from fear of polluting the sacred food in their stomachs by contact with common food. But the third day they hold a great feast. Even tribes which do not till the ground sometimes observe analogous ceremonies when they gather the first wild fruits or dig the first roots of the season. Thus, among the Salish and Tinneh Indians of Northwest America, before the young people eat the first berries or roots of the season, they always address to the fruit or plant, and begged for its favor and aid. In some tribes, regular first fruit ceremonies were annually held at the time of picking the wild fruit or gathering the roots, and also among the salmon-eating tribes when the run of the Sokaya salmon began. These ceremonies were not so much thanksgivings, as performances to ensure a plentiful crop or supply of the particular object desired, for if they were not properly and reverently carried out, there was danger of giving offense to the spirits of the objects, and being deprived of them. For example, these Indians are fond of the young shoots or suckers of the wild raspberry, and they observe a solemn ceremony at eating the first of them in season. The shoots are cooked in a new pot, The people assemble and stand in a great circle with closed eyes, while the presiding chief or medicine man invokes the spirit of the plant, begging that it will be propitious to them and grant them a good supply of suckers. After this part of the ceremony is over, the cooked suckers are handed to the presiding officer in a newly carved dish, and a small portion is given to each person present, who reverently and decorously eats it. The Thompson Indians of British Columbia cook and eat the sunflower root, Balsamahiza sagittata, nut. But they used to regard it as a mysterious being, and observed a number of taboos in connection with it. For example, women who were engaged in digging or cooking the root must practice continence, and no man might come near the oven where the women were baking the root. When young people ate the first berries, roots, or other products of the season, they addressed a prayer to the sunflower root as follows: I inform thee that I intend to eat thee. Mayest thou always help me to ascend, so that I may always be able to reach the tops of mountains, and may I never be clumsy. I ask this from thee, sunflower root. Thou art the greatest of all in mystery. To omit this prayer would make the eater lazy and cause him to sleep long in the morning. These customs of the Thompson and other Indian tribes of Northwest America are instructive, because they clearly indicate the motive, or at least one of the motives, which underlies the ceremonies observed at eating the first fruits of the season. That motive in the case of these Indians is simply a belief that the plant itself is animated by a conscious and more or less powerful spirit, who must be propitiated before the people can safely partake of the fruits or roots which are supposed to be part of his body. Now, if this is true of wild fruits and roots, we may infer with some probability that it is also true of cultivated fruits and roots, such as yams, and in particular that it holds good of the cereals, such as wheat, barley, oats, rice, and maize. In all cases, it seems reasonable to infer that the scruples which savages manifest at eating the first fruits of any crop, and the ceremonies which they observe before they overcome their scruples, are due at least in large measure to a notion that the plant or tree is animated by a spirit or even a deity, whose leave must be obtained, or whose favor must be sought, before it is possible to partake with safety of the new crop. This indeed is plainly affirmed of the Aino. They call the millet, the divine cereal, the cereal deity, and they pray to and worship him before they will eat of the cakes made from the new millet. And even where the indwelling divinity of the first fruits is not expressly affirmed, it appears to be implied both by the solemn preparations made for eating them and by the danger supposed to be incurred by persons who venture to partake of them without observing the prescribed ritual. In all such cases, accordingly, we may not improperly describe the eating of the new fruits as a sacrament or communion with a deity, or at all events with a powerful spirit. Among the usages which point to this conclusion are the custom of employing either new or specially reserved vessels to hold the new fruits, and the practice of purifying the persons of the common accounts before it is lawful to engage in the solemn act of communion with the divinity. Of all the modes of purification adopted on these occasions, none perhaps brings out the sacramental virtue of the rite so clearly as the Creek and Seminole practice of taking a purgative before swallowing the new corn. The intention is thereby to prevent the sacred food from being polluted by contact with common food in the stomach of the eater. For the same reason, Catholics partake of the Eucharist fasting. And among the pastoral Maasai of Eastern Africa, the young warriors, who live on meat and milk exclusively, are obliged to eat nothing but milk for so many days and then nothing but meat for so many more, and before they pass from the one food to the other they must make sure that none of the old food remains in their stomachs. This they do by swallowing a very powerful purgative and emetic. In some of the festivals which we have examined, the sacrament of first fruits is combined with a sacrifice or presentation of them to gods or spirits, and in course of time the sacrifice of first fruits tends to throw the sacrament into the shade, if not to supersede it. The mere fact of offering the first fruits to the gods or spirits comes now to be thought a sufficient preparation for eating the new corn. The high powers having received their share, man is free to enjoy the rest. This mode of viewing the new fruits implies that they are regarded no longer as themselves instinct with divine life, but merely as a gift bestowed by the gods upon man, who is bound to express his gratitude and homage to his divine benefactors by returning to them a portion of their bounty.